inspire, educate, connect. This is Yoga Digest, a vibrant community of passionate changemakers.
Hello, I'm Lacey Pruitt, author, yoga teacher, and Yoga Digest featured contributor. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Digest Now podcast. In today's podcast, we're talking with Rachel Braithen, the author of To Love and Let Go. She's also written a book called Yoga Girl, and you can find her on Instagram at Yoga Girl. She talks a little bit about the writing process, and she shares with readers some of the healing that took place as she was writing the book. Take a listen.
Here. Do we need to use the mics?
Yes, I'm concerned about these ladies.
Otherwise, we'll be yelling. Okay.
Here, I'm going to pull.
Hi. Oh, you guys look so beautiful.
Hi. Well, Rachel, you must be excited. This has been a busy week for you. Is it a little overwhelming?
A little bit. We were in Boston yesterday, and I've been making this joke that I'm going to confuse Austin with Boston, which was a joke because I've been to Austin before, and we've never seen Boston, and we love Austin, Texas. We were here for a couple of days and had a really, really nice time, and then we were making this joke, and then when I was checking in to go to the airport, I said, we're going to Boston. No, I said, Austin, Massachusetts. Confused and overwhelmed, but super happy to be here.
I am sure they'll forgive you. So I'm going to get started. Your first book, Yoga Girl, gave people kind of a nosedive into your life, more than Instagram or Facebook. I feel like this new book even takes a bigger dive in. What was your inspiration behind giving such private moments in your life to your readers?
I mean, I decided pretty early on that I didn't want to do this social media thing, the social media way. I did that a little while in the very beginning where I had this idea that I had to be someone or do something special every day or, be, you know, quote unquote inspirational, which is a really, I think, hard label to put on yourself. So the moment I started just being more truthful about life, it was easy. So I find that even today, if I'm like, oh, I want to be, you know, I want to inspire someone, that's kind of a load of bullshit because it has to be something that I authentically feel is real or it's not going to resonate that way, you know. So doing social media this way and books and everything I do, it just makes it easy.
I love that you utilize rituals. Did you use any rituals specifically while you were writing the new book?
I wish I did. You know, there are some people who are really good at writing books or very disciplined and, you know, wake up and write every single day. I'm kind of the, you know, don't do anything at all, and then I have a massive deadline and I do everything under immense pressure. So I had rituals in a sense of when I knew I had a really hard chapter to write, I gave myself space to be completely alone. Otherwise, I'm kind of writing on a plane or with my, you know, kid playing in the same room. I can multitask that way. But when I had hard things to write about, I tried to be create more of a sacred space so I really could tap into that place inside of myself, too.
I love that. And you know how to take care of yourself. So when things may get a little stressful, it's great that you have all the awareness that you do, that you shared with us in the book, to maintain your health as you keep going.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think the tool of, you know, yoga, of course, is a big, big piece in my life. But the process or the practice of sharing is a really big one. For me, journaling, and I think I got to do all of that with this book kind of wrapped into one.
I love it. So you shared a lot of deep personal things, and I saw a lot of healing with your family. Did that, tell me a little bit more about that. Did you heal even more while you wrote the latest book?
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, I think when you're going through something really overwhelmingly painful, so, I mean, many of you guys in this room have been through some sort of, you know, grief, trauma, loss. Inevitably, those things come our way at one point or another in life. And I think when we're living them, you know, that is, we need a little bit of perspective and time, and also to kind of remove ourselves from the immediate situation and the immediate pain before we can start the healing journey, in a sense. So I think after that, telling the story is a really big piece, at least it was for me, sort of keeping the people I lost alive, in a sense, but also almost, you know, reminding myself of what happened, but from this perspective of being here where I feel stable and safe, versus taking everything in when I felt completely unsteady and, you know, I didn't have my feet on the ground. It's a really hard thing to do. But then writing the book, I got to do that again. And then the final piece of this for me was I got to record the audio book, which I didn't do for the first book. I thought was this easy breezy thing. And I spent like 30 hours crying, trying to not, you know, I had to pause because I had to blow my nose every 5 minutes. Like, this is going to be a mess of an audio book. But it was really, speaking it in that sense was really, really healing.
I bet. So as a yoga instructor, the flow of the book really spoke to me. You started with chapter one, which you titled The End, and it spoke about some loss. And then the last chapter is the beginning with little Miss Leilina. You want to tell me more about that? Is that something that the readers just gleaned? Did you expect that to happen, or did it just happen organically?
It kind of happened. A lot of people have commented on that, and I didn't think about that a lot. I knew I wanted the chapters to be, you know, not this fluffy long sentence of something that describes the chapter, but I wanted just one word, almost like, even though it's a memoir and it's kind of chronological, mm-hmm. I wanted people to be able to pick a word and go to that place of the book. So I chose words like surrender or forgive or, you know, things that were pieces of the puzzle for my own healing journey. But it wasn't until at the very end, when I kind of put everything together, that I realized that the, you know, the end was the beginning and the beginning was the end. Yeah. So it was, yeah, beautiful how it came together.
It was beautiful. Another beautiful part of the book is the love letter to Andrea that you explain at the end. Do you want to tell us more about her?
Yeah, she was awesome. I have this piece in the book that I just reread it recently, where one of the first moments I had when I was teaching yoga again after she had passed away, and I had a sea of, because I blessed to teach yoga to these very big groups of people, which is odd and awesome, but I had this sea of people, and I kept seeing little pieces of her in each person, like every single person, and it was such a almost cathartic moment, you know, almost the kind of divine realization, not just in the material things or being reminded of her because someone looked like her, but that the people we lose or we've lost, we can find them in everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, we are all so very connected, and this idea that we're separate from each other, it's the big illusion. You know, it's the heart of what yoga teaches us too. So, and I get to continue to experience that, I mean, every day.
So more of that beginning that you talk about, Little Miss Leilina, tell me a little bit about how has it changed your perspective on anything you pick, being a mom?
I mean, Jesus. Everything. Yeah, like, who's maybe the mom in here? It's like life before being a mom and life after, in a sense. I find that it's easier for me to drop into a place of joy now than it was before. I think before I had her, I had this idea that I needed to accomplish really great things. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to celebrate things. I like to create reasons to celebrate, like, I don't know, accomplishing something or something we do in our business or in the family, or, you know, I need a reason to be joyful all the time. And I think now being a mom, I get to have like 100 of those little moments every day instead of, you know, once in a while a big celebration of something. And it's made my whole life just joyful. I mean, and I'm blessed. I mean, all children are beautiful, but I like to believe my child is like particularly, I don't know. She's wild and crazy, but there's something about her face. She's just smiling all the time.
And did she take to the doggies? Does she know your doggies?
The dogs?
Yes, I fell in love with your doggies while I was reading the book.
Yeah, they're amazing. She's kind of I don't know, she's a toddler, so she goes between being like a little shit sometimes, or being jealous sometimes of the dogs, to, you know, like they're her brothers and sisters. She wants to sleep with them in bed, which is hard, but, you know, we're all a big family.
Well, so trust really was a very big theme as a reader, as I flowed through both of your stories, really. I see how you had to learn to trust, sometimes trust again, and sometimes just give second chances. If anybody was struggling with trust issues in the audience, how would you say they could take the next best step? What would be the first thing to do, or and reason why?
Yeah. Anyone with trust issues in here? I had two hands to raise. I'm very high. I think when it comes to trust, if we're not really present with why we are encountering those challenges, in a sense of it being something that stems from ourselves, right, from our own past, from our own experience, we are very likely to project trust issues onto other people. Like, people aren't trustworthy. You know, if you've ever had that sense, or people betray me a lot, I can't trust people. You know, people are generally bad, or it's hard to trust because other people are not trustworthy, which actually, you know, isn't necessarily true at all. It depends on how we walk through life. And if we've had experiences in our past where we were betrayed, or where we were abandoned, or where we actually couldn't trust, especially in our childhood, it's going to be instilled in us that life isn't a safe place. Like, this world isn't a safe place to be, and people are eventually going to betray or leave. And instead of thinking, oh, there's something wrong with everybody else, which sometimes, of course, there is, like, people can be assholes, obviously, but I think more than that, there's it means that there's something left for us to connect or to heal inside of ourselves. So I grew up with a dad, like, his mantra literally to me my whole life was, don't trust anybody. He said that to me 100,000 times a day. Whenever I travel anywhere, like, don't forget, don't trust anybody. Like, you know, which isn't very helpful, to be honest. And I find that a good example of that, I think, because I've traveled the world a lot, and I've never, anytime I've felt unsafe, I can always connect that to me not feeling grounded within myself. Mm-hmm. And I've been to places that are, you know, quote unquote, not safe, or people telling you to be careful with your stuff, and felt so safe and held and comforted, because it's, you know, we want to be sensible about stuff, but I think it's important to be able to feel safe in life and to be able to relax into the space we are. Otherwise, we're going to, you know, walk around in circles looking for something that's actually not out there.
Yeah. So you talk a little bit about how life really does get busy over time, if you're busy with your career, busy being a mom. How do you ground yourself during those moments of life where you just need some calm, you need some still? Where do you go back to? Is there any favorite ritual?
Drink a lot of wine. People are like, yoga girl, give me the special yoga secret. No, I'm joking, but I'm missing that. I use a mix of things. Yes. I mean, definitely some of them that stem from the yogic tradition, and you know, this very sacred side of my life that involves meditation, that involves the yoga practice, that involves my altar and ritual and things like that. And then I have weeks like this week. I'm not going back to my hotel room to sit and meditate after this. I'm going to go drink a glass of wine in Austin. Like, that's going to be my transition to ground again. And I used to think that, you know, I can't share that because I'm going to be judged, because it's not a yogic thing to do. Where now I feel more, whatever brings you a sense of peace or joy in that moment, do that. And then if we steer in toward a place where we're overdoing that, then okay, we maybe need to come back to a place of grounding again. But more than anything, I think the practice of sharing, of speaking how we feel, that's for me is the number one thing, no matter how challenging something is. If I have a space to talk about that, whether it's with a friend, mm-hmm. or right now, or on a podcast, or, you know, with a stranger in yoga class, getting to share how I feel and share my insecurities and my fears is the best way for me to process, and it becomes this very sacred ritual that I think we should all have. You know, that's why therapy works. You can also do little bits of it every day.
Yes. I'm curious about your nonprofits. What made you decide? You have three of them, correct? You have a foundation, Sergeant Pepper's Friends, which I love, and then you have a nonprofit that supports women and children. Talk to us more about those and why each were important to you.
I mean, I think for all of us, having a sense of service or you know, being part of the practice of service is something we have to do. I mean, I really think so. And if we don't feel connected to service of any kind, I think it's usually a sign that we are really working through something within ourselves that's just too heavy. Because, of course, you know, being of service, it's also a privilege to be able to look around and see where can I give. If my cup is overflowing, then where can I pour? So if we're working on filling our own cup first, then I think it's a hard thing to do. But it's one of those things that's proven, one of the really few things in life that actually brings immediate happiness is to do something kind for someone else.
Yes.
It works every time. And it doesn't have to be this grand thing of, you know, starting nonprofits or big missions or big global projects, but, you know, opening the door for someone or babysitting for your single mom friend, or, you know, little things every day go such a long way. And I think it's the practice of seva, it's just taking the yoga practice off the mat. And for me, I mean, children and animals is that's my thing, but we all have our own thing, right? Whatever that is. And I think we should do a little something, you know, that we have that piece in our lives that we know that we're of service in some form.
I love that. I want to talk about Dennis. I was trying to look for him.
Yeah, he's always hiding in the back.
Yes.
He doesn't like people.
So we all have learned, you know, we've learned more about Yoga Girl, and we love who you are and what you're all about. I wanted to talk a little bit about your support team, which of course includes Dennis. How has this been as you've grown in popularity? How has it been with him? Do y'all ever have a conversation about what do you think? What's going on?
I mean,
what's his male perspective on Yoga Girl and what you're trying to accomplish and what you are accomplishing?
I mean, he's a very, wherever he's literally hiding somewhere now, for you guys not to look at him. He's all the way in the corner. He's a very humble guy. And I don't think there's been one point in all of this or our relationship where he's ever been like, I don't know. I don't want to say he's unimpressed by everything, but he's kind of unimpressed by everything. Regardless of what happens, I know we could trade everything we do or everything we have to living in a shack in the forest somewhere. He'd be just as happy today or then as he is today. So we were in Boston yesterday. We had, you know, I took 500 pictures with people, and he was like, I took at least 250. So we have a lot of fun, you know, and I think, which is the most important thing. It's fun for us to do these things. It's fun for us to travel, which we don't get to do as much. So we have different roles in our business, but I'm kind of the creator, and he's the one who kind of keeps us grounded every day.
And it's very much a team effort. I see that just knowing y'all the way I do.
100%.
I wanted to ask, I'm going to quote here because I'll mess it up, but there was a very beautiful quote that you used in the book, and it was to describe Andrea. And it said, the light that glitters across the ocean as the sun sets. That's just beautiful. And I'm curious, are you able to channel that vision, that feeling better now? Or is it something that you've had to work on? Do you, in an instant, can you just go, okay, yeah, there she is. There it is.
I think it's something that I share in the book also. My whole life I've had a very hard time connecting to the idea of God or the idea of something bigger than me, other than in moments of despair. So it's almost been my darkest moments have been my moments where I felt closest to God, where I've had all of these epiphanies, all of these life changes, these things that I felt like I have to write a book because no one's going to believe me. Like those things, they didn't come about when everything was fine and dandy and sitting on a beach somewhere feeling great. So I've worked a lot on continuing the practice that puts me in a place where I feel close to that light, to infinite love, to God, whatever you call it. Also in times that aren't filled with despair and loss and pain. So having that practice every day of just remembering why I'm here. And it's not always easy. You know, it's easy to get caught up with day-to-day stuff. But I find for me, the yoga practice takes me there. My daughter takes me there. My husband, you know, and sometimes I have consecutive weeks of forgetting why I'm here, and then inevitably something happens of like, oh, okay, you know, back on track. So I don't think it's something that you find and then it never goes away. I think it's something we work on every day.
You do a lot. I'm curious what's next on your agenda. What do you want to get creative about after?
I don't know. That's a really good question. I have been wanting to get off of social media for a while. I've been working on creating a space in the online world where we can keep all the good and beautiful parts about social media, but leave the things that are, I think, really distracting to day-to-day life. So on our platform, yogagirl.com, we're building out a community space, which is, I envision like a circle in a yoga shala. How can we do that online in a way that's really authentic and real and where we can be vulnerable? And so it's basically a tech project.
Okay. Yeah.
But I've been working for like 2 years doing that. So that's something that hopefully is coming soon. And then, I don't know, I want to go on vacation, I think. I don't know. Hang out and cook with my daughter. And but we have a lot of things. We have, I don't know, we have a clothing line coming, which is exciting, the sustainable, all organic clothing line supporting our nonprofit, which is fun. So there's little things like that, that of course is a big deal, but I don't feel as, I feel like a big deal is being on vacation. That feels like a big project.
I love
but,
that. Yeah. Is there anything else you want to share before I open up to the crowd for Q&A?
No, I don't know. I'm just happy to see you guys. Everyone, it's so hot in Austin. So everyone is just, I don't know if that's why you're so happy all the time. I don't know. But no, and I'm open to sharing anything. I'm really grateful you bought the book, and I hope it touches something in you, you know, especially for anyone who might be working through something really hard. Or I had a few people, I don't know how I feel about that, but I had a few people say that it opened something from long ago, which I like to believe that there's divine timing in that too. So hopefully the book is in your hands now for a good reason. So just thank you.
Who has a burning question? All right, go.
Thanks for coming to Austin. I actually saw you in Mountain View at your first book signing in California. So you in ripped jeans and, you know, no mom, so it's cool to see you now all in mom gear.
This is mom gear. Thank you.
That's not a question. So I just bought your book, so I haven't read it all, but I helped my younger brother die, and I'm sure most of the people in the audience have experienced deep loss and out of order loss and all of this. So to love and to let go to me means to like leave them behind a little bit. So if you could just speak on how it is, my mom and I often say we live and love on. So like just the letting go part of you that's begun for us. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm sorry for your loss. No, I think it's such an abstract concept, the idea of holding on or the idea of letting go. And it's something we hear a lot also in yoga class and meditation practice. And I think for me, the art of letting go means letting go of the resentment or letting go of the things that weigh, the things that weigh really heavy. And I don't like the term, you know, moving on, as if, you know, one day we'll put all of this behind us and have a new life and everything is fine now. I think it's more about learning how to live in a different way. I had a teacher once who did something that I kind of imprinted in my mind forever. He had me hold a pen like this. He said, okay, hold on really tight. And we had a whole meditation around holding this pen in our hands. And he said, and now open your palm, open your hand, and let it go. And I did, and this pen is still balancing there. And then we did it again, and he said, now flip your perspective, turn your hand around, and now let go, and the pen dropped. So I think that it's almost like this, you know, the mandalas and the sand, almost these things that we come back to and have to start over again and recreate the idea of what am I letting go and why. And I like to believe that there is a way to hold on to all the things that were really good and the memory of them and the love that was there and also the lessons that we learn and the pain. Because if we let everything go, then it means that all the journey that came from that hard time is also gone. So there's a part of us is meant to hold on to even the painful things, but not so much the things that keep us stuck in the past or that freeze us or paralyze us and keep us unable from moving forward, I guess. So not so much the idea of moving on and leaving things behind, but letting go and being lighter, in a sense, so that we can invite new things into our life too. Because it's easy to get stuck, you know, especially in big grief, big pain, and then live from that for the rest of our lives. So I don't know if this answers your question.
That's very helpful. Thank you. Because I think to let go of what isn't serving your highest purpose is helpful. Because like just thinking to love and let go, I think, oh, you're just letting go of all of it. What's not serving you.
Thank you.
Who else we have? Oh, all right. I'm wired over here. It's weird. Okay.
Hi, my name's Annie. In one of your podcasts, you spoke to Andrea, and it was like, I think the one when you had gone to Costa Rica, and it was like really intense, and I was driving and just tears, like crying the tears over. And you spoke about how you were very angry, right, at God or whatever it was, because you lost your best friend. But then you made a comment that said, what if that was, like, her living to that age was it? That was part of the plan for her. How did you realize that and become okay with it?
I just love that idea. Like, even now you saying that makes me feel like, oh, you know, because if that's the thing, if that's the plan all along, you know, some people get 24 years, some people get one, some people get 105, then there's no loss, right? There's loss in the sense of we're gonna miss their physical presence and, you know, like the friendship or the day-to-day interactions or the laughter and things like that. But I think the part of loss that makes it so unbearably hard is the feeling that someone was taken too soon. So, and I write that in the book too, my grandmother passed away at the same time, and I got to experience the loss of her dying at a really old age with all the people surrounded by her whole family there. That was this almost like, like easy letting go somehow, even though I loved her and I miss her. But Andrea dying, you know, she was 24 years old, it just felt like this can't be meant this way, no way. And then you suddenly lose all trust in life, you lose trust and faith in God, you start questioning everything. It feels like the world is a cruel place. You know, what's the point of all this? There's war and famine and people dying, and suddenly everything gets really, really, really dark. So someone sent me a poem when she died that said something like that. Like, what if that's the time we get? And I remember it freed something in me, like, oh. And then, because I also remembered she did a lot of things her last months before she passed away that were super weird. But now I can laugh at it almost, because I kind of get the sense of, like, what if, I don't think she consciously knew, but what if our souls know somehow, like we finish what we're supposed to finish, and some people just burn really bright for a short time, and it just makes the whole concept of death, I think, a little easier to bear, for me at least.
Thank you.
I think
that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. I think you can reach, actually.
You got a scoot.
Hi. So Rachel, when I first got my hands on your book, I opened to a random page, and the page was the letter that Andrea wrote to you, and I felt chills through my body. And I feel like you wove her spirit so beautifully into the book that, like, I almost, like, felt her presence somehow. And so my question for you is, have you felt her recently, since the book is so much about her?
Yeah. And it's kind of funny almost, because I'm doing this book tour now, and then we're planning for it, and there's events and this and talks, and not once until my first event, which was 2 days ago, was sitting in a chair in a theater getting the question asked, and I realized, like, oh yeah, we're talking about this now. Like, huh. Because I haven't, you know, in this format with people just the way they are now, spoken about, you know, this loss in my life. I share on the podcast, which is a million people listen, but it's just me alone in my room. It's not the same. And now it's almost like, because I get to talk about her every day, it's this joyful thing. And I find that if I let too much time pass and then someone asks me about her, it's almost like, oh, it's hard to talk about all of a sudden. But if I have that little bits of conversation every day, then it becomes like she's there all the time. Like, then as in I can, you know, have little anecdotes or remember something or come across something she would have loved, and then it's like she didn't leave, you know. So So yeah, I feel her all the time.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
So to start, divine timing. I went to Aruba a year and a half ago, and I volunteered with Sergeant Peppers, and you were out of town, and I actually didn't see this, but I moved to Austin a week and a half ago, and I was stuck in traffic, and I was scrolling through Instagram, and you were there, and I'm going to be in Austin tonight, and I took the quickest shower of my life to get here. So divine timing, I don't know, but here you are. Moving to new places and things like that, and I know you've done that in your life, but I think for women too, fear can be such a powerful feeling, and I was just wondering, what is your learning that you've done or your advice when it comes to that overpower feeling of fear, and how do you get past that when fear sometimes holds you back?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a really good question. I don't think that there is, if you would envision a person living completely free of any kind of fear, I mean, that's some sort of lunatic. I mean, must be. Like anyone who is never fazed by anything or never worried or anxious or fearful about anything, there's a little bit of arrogance to that, I think. So I like to remind myself that a little bit of fear is healthy. It's because, you know, it's telling me, oh, I'm entering this new territory now. It's telling me to keep my eyes open, to think twice about what I'm doing, to take a breath, to be present, and not just charge and, you know, without thinking about it. So I think fear can be this thing that just alerts us to a little bit more consciousness, you know, to really be present with where I am. But if it's something that we feel is paralyzing us and holding us back, and we have all these dreams and things we want to do and create, I think that the inner critical voice in our heads telling us you can't do it. You know, or if you do, it's going to turn to shit, or you're going to be all alone, you're never going to succeed. I don't think that's fear. I think that's that inner critical voice that so many of us have in the back of our heads every single day. And it's this voice that we are conditioned to hear since we are little. I mean, not just girls, but boys, all of us, since we are little, that we're not okay the way we are. It's part of socializing. It's really hard to do as a parent to raise a child and have them feel totally okay with who they are, because there's going to be social situations where it's not cool to lie on the floor and scream and have a tantrum. And then we get older and the less cool it gets, even though we feel the same feelings, right? And it's easy to understand a two-year-old in a tantrum at the grocery store, and I'm almost 31 and I want to have a tantrum at the grocery store, and it's just not accepted, you know? So I think that voice that constantly tells us that you have to do better, be different, don't be sad, don't be angry, suck it up, be fine, look great, be thinner, be successful. I mean, it never, ever, ever ends. And if that voice is really loud, we're going to start believing it, you know. So especially if it's telling us that you can't, don't go there, you know. Or if you go there, everything will fall apart. Or instead of having that voice of the inner cheerleader, that voice that tells us that, well, yeah, you know, I don't know all the things are going to happen if I go for this, but you know, what's the actual worst thing that can happen? It's usually not that kind of disaster scenario that we have in the back of our heads. But for me, overcoming fear has a lot to do with the practice of self-acceptance and self-love and feeling okay where I am now, and then taking that feeling of feeling okay into the uncharted territory, so that even if things go to shit, like, I'm still here, you know? So that there's that groundedness that, you know, it's not going to take the fear away, but it's going to allow me to move forward, even though I'm fearful. Yeah, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, knowing you're enough.
Right. Anyway, yeah. Right. So I think it's almost like two different things. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know. It's kind of cool to, when you catch that voice, or, you know, I'm super scared, or I don't think I can do this, to be like, turn it around. You know, you can't. No, you can't. No, you can't. No, you can't. Well, yes, I can. Well, yes, I can. And see where that takes you, you know? Right. And worst case scenario, you end up where you started, and then, you know, that's okay too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going with who I
yeah,
think.
Was,
you pick one.
Yes.
I don't know. There's a girl in the back.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm so excited to come here today. I grew up from Houston. Mm-hmm. You even liked when I told you that. Mm-hmm. And I was watching Great British Break Off last night.
So good. Best show.
And it was a super waffle episode. So of course I thought of you. And then I was thinking, I saw your mom posted that she was trying to fall asleep, but she couldn't without you because you weren't putting things on her head. So the question is, when you get back to Mormor and Linus, what's the first thing you're going to put on Mormor's head?
This is the funniest. If anyone doesn't follow me on Instagram, you're like, what's happening? I don't know. I put whatever's on the table because I can't move because then she wakes up. Yeah, yeah. It's really funny. She loves it. Honestly, she thinks it's super funny.
I can't do this without you, daughter.
No, no. People are always like, you're so mean to your mom. So she falls asleep on the couch and I gently place light things on the top of her head to see how many I can stack before she wakes up. It's love. It's love. No, we have a lot of fun. We really do. Yeah. And it's really cool because we can be here and I can be 100% sure and calm and relaxed that Lea Luna is in the best, you know.
Palm tree. I hear it sleeping still.
Oh, a palm tree, yeah, we had a palm tree fall. It's okay, everything's okay. Thank you. Yeah, you pick.
I don't know. Okay, here you go. I saw this lady earlier. Go ahead.
Hi. So, I've been following you for a while, I'm sure, like, a lot of people have. But I remember this post you made forever ago where you were, like, really new to Instagram and you made a comment where you were like, people want to hear my voice. Or I don't know if you remember this, but you were like, why are people wanting to hear my voice if you've only been posting pictures? And it was just like really, really new. And then I just wondered like how you feel about thinking like back to then, like when you first started, and now like, your voice is heard all of the time, but just like thinking like back to that point, like versus now, like where you've come, just like how, your thoughts and feelings of being such a influencer, you know, author, like just well known with everyone, and just like your thoughts, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think I see myself that way. I don't know. It's really a beautiful thing to be able to meet people in person. And I think the challenging thing about what I do is I live on a tiny Caribbean island with no people, in Aruba, no one gives a shit about anything we do. I mean, really, you know, we drag people by the hair to come to yoga class. Like, it's just a very different culture, and all the work I do alone at home or at our tiny little office at our yoga studio. So it's not like I have this idea that I'm talking to so many people every day, or because I don't get to meet people every day in that sense. So I feel really privileged that I get to, you know, just to be able to write a book and have this story that I really wanted to share, and then immediately have, you know, you guys go buy it and come here and be here. It's this massive privilege. And that I get to do that from the comfort of my home, it's just, I feel really grateful. But I also struggle with the same inner critical voice that I think most of us has, that, you know, no one really wants to listen to this stuff. Like, no one really cares, that's not a good thought, no, like, do something else. Every day, that thought is there, and I just have to do what I do and say what I say anyway, you know.
Okay. I'm going to just turn this way because I haven't yet.
Okay. Uh-huh. Cool. There she is.
Okay, so I'm shaking. I'm from Iraq, and I try a lot of times to tell my husband to have faith. Everything happened for a reason. He said faith and dangerous. What is your thought on that?
The faith is dangerous.
Just, I don't know how to explain it to him, but I'm like, everything happened in God's plan.
You know, it's really a hard, thing to share because it depends on
seeing you, not
yeah. I mean, but that whole concept that, you know, it's God's plan, it is what it is, accept everything that is. It's also this big spiritual idea that, right, everything happens for a reason, which is a load of shit if you're living in a country that's torn by war, if you're being, you know, suppressed, systematically oppressed, if you're suffering from racism, severe, in the midst of severe trauma and abuse. That is, you know, not a truth. And it's something I share that a lot because I'm in a place in my life where I could see the horrible things I went through now put me where I am, and it's my personal experience. But if we've been through really traumatic things and we're still living them, or they're still alive somewhere in us, then that feeling, the idea of trust, is like I'm letting go of control. Yeah. And if we've never had the practice of being able to let go of control without everything turning to shit, it's going to be a really terrifying idea. You know, it's going to really feel like the world is a dangerous place. And for a lot of people, the world is a dangerous place. So when I speak of that, it's, you know, in this setting, us being here right now, having the privilege to go to yoga class, to read these books, to do that kind of work. But, you know, learning to trust again after having trust taken away or never even growing up with it in the first place, it's this very, very subtle process. And we have to do that little drips at a time, little pieces at a time, and not expect that one day we're going to wake up and like, oh, trust the universe again. It's something that happens with the practice of actually having people around who stay, you know, or maybe going back and doing that trauma healing work of working with what happened in the first place. But it's such an individual journey. You know, if someone, people told me when Andrea died, everything happens for a reason. Man, like that's a really insulting thing to say to someone who just lost someone, right? And, you know, I can sit here today and say I found purpose in that loss, but it was, you know, she was meant to die. Like, I still don't believe that. You know, I would change all of this, take all of it away if I had 5 more minutes with her. So the idea that it is what it is, it's also it's a concept I struggle with too. Thank you for coming.
We only have time for one more.
Okay.
So I'm gonna take this little girl. I say little girl.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
So my question is, me personally, I don't know about anything else, but I deal a lot with anxiety and not really living in the present moment, worrying either about the past or the future, or who am I going to please next, or what assignments due next at work. And so I guess my question is, how do you get brought back to that present moment and sort of calm yourself to kind of live in the now versus the past or the future?
I think we're all really different when it comes to that. A really great example of that is me and my husband. If I'm feeling anxious about something, I need to talk that problem into the ground. Like, I need to vent and share and look at it from all angles and, you know, open all the lids to everything and kind of figure that out. And he'll go, I'm going to go for a 10-mile run. And then he leaves. So for some of us, you know, movement and being alone and silence is, you know, something that brings us immediately into the present moment. For me, I can't rid myself of anxiety until I get to find something that looks like a solution, at least in my head. I need some sort of light at the end of a tunnel. If it's drafting up like a plan for where I'm about to go, or talking to someone, or sharing it somehow, and then I need to do something that drops me back into my body. So yoga practice, dancing in my living room, going for a swim, going outside, hugging my daughter, anything that brings me here now. Baking, wine, I mean, and sometimes we have to tick off that list if it's real serious anxiety, you know, and if it's there for a really long time, we have to go down the list of all the tools that we have. And we have to build that toolbox. I think it's all of our responsibility to have a toolbox for emergency moments when we get panic attacks, anxiety, might have stretches of time that are really long where we feel anxious every day. You know, therapy works. It does for a reason. Medication, when we need it, also works. I don't like the idea that it has to be this something holistic only, and that, you know, if we take anti-anxiety medication, that's something to be ashamed of. No. But, you know, therapy, sharing our problems, talking about it, at least for me, that's been really helpful. But I also think the combination of some sort of physical movement so that it can register in the body that we're here. A really good present moment, you know, practice is identifying things that are actually presently unfolding. So if we're in the midst of something that brings us immense anxiety, you know, what are 5 things that I see right now? What are 5 things that I hear right now? 5 things I can touch? 5 things I can smell? Anything that brings us back to what's now, you know, because usually that thing we're anticipating, it's not playing out now, right? It's in the mind of what if, or I shouldn't have. So what can, you know, how can I orient myself back here now? And I mean, yoga is a great way, at least for me, but, you know, we all have our own thing. So go to that.
You have some books to sign.
I do.
It's been an honor.
Thank you, Lacey. Thank you so much. Thank you guys so much.